Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side B of For the Record Program number 326, and mothers shall but laugh to see their babes halved before their eyes. That a quote from Mark Antony's speech over Julius Caesar's body in Shakespeare's The Tragedy of Julius Caesar. This is being recorded on September 16th of the year 2001. This broadcast is an analysis, albeit obviously incomplete at this juncture in time and given my extremely limited resources, of the terrorist blitzkrieg, as I call it, of September 11th of 2001, in which the World Trade Center was destroyed and the Pentagon damaged in a series of what were basically kamikaze attacks by Middle Eastern hijackers who flew jet planes into the targets. What we're going to be doing, and I do not pretend to be able to give a complete analysis of this event, but we took a look inside A at some of the curious circumstances surrounding intelligence failures in this particular case, and what we're going to do inside B, among other things, is to look at some of the many German connections to this particular case. Now, to make a very, very long story very, very short, I do not want the remarks I'm about to make to be misunderstood as being anti-German any more than when I talk about Middle Eastern terrorists. I'm anti-Arab or anything else. To make a long story short, I believe, and this is an opinion, I believe that the executive authority behind this attack was what I have called the Underground Reich, literally a Third Reich gone underground, perpetuated through enormous economic wealth and the profound political and intelligence connections of the security outfit of former Gestapo chief Heinrich Mueller, the wealth and the political command having been exercised by Martin Bormann, Hitler's deputy and the genius behind the throne in Nazi Germany. And that is an element which is neither German nor American nor Middle Eastern, but which embraces powerful, decisive power elements within all three of those countries. So please note that as an advisory. In numerous broadcasts, I've noted that there are evidentiary tributaries running between this investigation and many other terrorist incidents. I also noted in For the Record Program 325 a number of things that took place in the summer of 2001 which might constitute maneuvering in order to cover up this event which took place in September. One of those, the appointment of former Bush Justice Department prosecutor Robert Mueller to head up the FBI. Mueller in the past has supervised the badly attenuated investigations into the prosecution of Manuel Noriega, the BCCI case, and the bombing of Pan Am 103, all of which would have gone to the Iran-Contra scandal, and the elder George Bush, who was not only in the loop in the Iran-Contra scandal, his disclaimers to the contrary notwithstanding, he was the loop. And I would note that in looking into the Iran-Contra scandal, one would have come across the intergovernmental agency, intergovernmental networks that were created pursuant to the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism. That Vice President was former CIA Director George Bush, and it was George Bush, as we've looked at in among other programs, For the Record Program 174 and For the Record Program number 248, Bushed, the Political Legacy of George Bush. Those networks were used by George Bush as sort of his private intelligence service, and he was the executive authority with regard to both the arming of the Iranian weapon sales and also the arming of Iraq, both of those accomplished through those networks. And, of course, Iran and Iraq were two of the terrorist-supporting nations, terrorist-supporting states that we were told we needed to be careful, we needed to guard against, and it turned out that the Reagan and Bush administrations were in bed with those very elements. And as we've looked at in For the Record Program number 29, in For the Record Programs 32, 35, and 38, one of the principal people involved, and as we saw in For the Record 29, the main cog in these networks, was one of the most notorious terrorists and weapons dealers of recent memory, namely Manzer El-Kassar. And he was utilized by George Bush and his networks in the obtaining East Bloc weapons for the Contras and in the Iranian weapons transfers. In For the Record, or in RFA number 35, the December surprise, the politics of terror and the exoneration of the secret team, we took a look at the bombing of Pan Am 103, the fact that, among other things, a military intelligence team led by Charles McKee had apparently come across the connections between the Iran-Contra team and Manzer El-Kassar. The insurance investigators report maintained that when news of the bomb on Pan Am 103 came through, authorities were told to, quote, let it go. unquote. Many people have disputed the validity of the insurance investigator's report, but I think the events that have taken place certainly point to significant elements of credibility in that. Beyond that, I would point out that in the bombing of Pan Am 103, there were profound German connections. Not only was the bomb apparently put on the plane, on Pan Am 103 in Germany, the plane having come from Malta, but beyond that, the German law enforcement and intelligence authorities had come across terrorist cells in Germany with documented links to the people who later performed the bomb, and they were allowed to go. And one of the people originally arrested in that, a fellow named Marwan Krisat, was an informant for German intelligence, reported various as working for BND, their Federal Intelligence Service, and the successor to the Reinhard Gehlen outfit, and the BKA, the West German equivalent of the FBI. Please note again that the badly attenuated investigation into Pan Am 103 was overseen by former Bush Justice Department prosecutor Robert Mueller, who recently became head of the FBI and now could be considered a Bush administration's insider in charge of the investigation, and an individual who, if his past record is any indication, will prove less than vigorous in his pursuit of the full scope of the truth, certainly whenever that truth would be damaging to Bush. The New York Times of Friday, September 14th of the year 2001, had an article by Stephen Erlanger, Statelined Berlin, September 13th, and it's headlined by the New York Times, German officials link three Arab men to attack. Skipping down, last year's trial on the 1988 bombing of Pan Am Flight 103, which went down over Scotland, indicated that some Arab extremist groups had chosen Germany as their base. Quote, "We have individuals, participants, and conspirators here, but Germany functions more as a safe haven than an organizing center," unquote, said Kai Hafez of the German Institute for Middle East Studies in Hamburg. I would note that the funding for the World Trade Center bombing in 1993 came from Germany. Pan Am 103 has major evidentiary tributaries running through Germany, and so, obviously, does the investigation into the terrorist blitzkrieg of 9/11/2001. And, again, I'm wondering, my opinion is that the executive authority in this act is what I call the Underground Reich, neither American nor German nor Middle Eastern, but involving historically and politically very powerful elements in the Middle East and in Germany and in the United States, apparently including Osama bin Laden and King Ibn Saud, his father's protege and in-law, and also the Bush family, whose association with Nazi industries goes all the way back to the early 1920s. The San Jose Mercury News of Friday, September 14th of the year 2001, had more about some of the German connections to this case. This is an article by Daniel Rubin of the Mercury News Berlin Bureau, Dateline Hamburg, Germany, headlined, "Search Extends to Germany. Hijackers Had Attended University in Hamburg." It reads in part as follows. Police have searched several apartments in this northern German city, including one rented until February by three men officials say died after hijacking three of the U.S. jetliners that crashed, killing thousands. They identified two of them, Mohammed Atta, 33, and Marwan al-Shehi, S-H-E-H-I, 23, as citizens of the United Arab Emirates who had been enrolled in the Technical University of Hamburg-Harburg. The Boston Globe reported, however, that Atta carried a Saudi passport. Quote, "It's highly likely that the clues needed to solve this mystery lie in student circles in Germany," unquote, said the country's top prosecutor, K. Nahm, N-E-H-M, and I may be mispronouncing his name. Last Thursday, German federal investigators had shut down the campus computer network, searched a room rented by a Muslim student group that Atta founded, and were combing through the group's personal computer. And again, please note that in numerous broadcasts, we've noted the profound fascist connections to elements in the Middle East, ranging from SS Colonel Otto Skorzeny, in charge of commando operations for the Third Reich, and a principal functionary of the Odessa, who worked for Gehlen and for CIA at various times, who trained the first Palestinian terrorists while working for the CIA, and whose Paladin mercenary group, a fascist mercenary group, was financed in part by Muammar Gaddafi. And the head of the Paladin mercenary group in the 1970s was Gerhard Hartmut von Schubert, formerly of the Goebbels propaganda ministry. Gaddafi's secret service, as we've looked at in, among other programs, for the record 283 and 145, was put together by Heinrich Müller, the head of the Gestapo and the security director for the Underground Reich and the Bormann Organization, The first leader of the Palestinian National Movement was none other than Haj Amin al-Husseini, a major in the SS and a primary German spy who recruited, among other outfits, the 13th Waffen-SS or Hanjar Division, composed of Bosnian Muslims, and also the 21st or Skanderbeg Division, composed of Kosovar Albanians. And the current president of Bosnia, Adia Izetbegovic, was actually a member of the Hanjar Division as a young man. We should note that Osama bin Laden, if in fact he was his outfit was involved in this attack, Osama bin Laden got his start as a guerrilla fighter while working for the CIA in Afghanistan against the Soviets. One of the outfits deeply involved in the anti-Soviet outfit in Afghanistan was the World Muslim Congress, which was founded by the aforementioned Haj Amin al-Husseini. I would also point out that bin Laden's father, Mohammed bin Laden, married into the family of King Ibn Saud, the founder of Saudi Arabia, who was heavily involved with not only Nazi Germany, but also Alan Dulles, the corporate lawyer who masked the Bush companies, the Bush family's Nazi front companies, the companies that were confiscated by the alien property custodian in during World War II, and that in general, King Ibn Saud, the bin Laden family, and the Bush family have a common heritage with the Third Reich, both in its above-ground and in its below-ground phases. There's good discussion of Ibn Saud and the Third Reich in For the Record program number 216. That's available for download from sister station WFMU's website. Of course, the bin Laden family's Texas business representative, James R. Bath, put forth a portion of the venture capital that went to start Arbusto Energy, George Bush's first energy company. People have known, that's George W. Bush, by the way. People who knew Bath at the time said he had very little money of his own and speculated that that money, in fact, came from his wealthy Saudi clients, possibly including the family of Osama bin Laden. That information, by the way, should be available from not only the registration of James R. Bath in Texas as the business representative of the bin Laden family, but also in the incorporation papers for Arbusto Energy. So again, in this extremely complicated and very disturbing event, on which we obviously have incomplete information, one should avoid oversimplification, whether one is talking about the U.S. intelligence system or the forces involved, and one no more wants to be anti-German or anti-Arab in this than one wants to be anti-American. There are fascist elements within all of those milieu, bound together, as I've said, by the underground Reich. More about the German connections to this particular event. This is from the San Jose Mercury News of Sunday, September 16th of the year 2001. This is an article by Daniel Rubin and Tony Heinze, H-E-I-N-Z-E, of the Mercury News Berlin Bureau at Stateline, Bochum, Germany, B-O-C-H-U-M, headlined, Hijackers Activities in Germany Tracked. And this deals with a couple of other Germans as well. One of the men the FBI suspects of hijacking the plane that crashed Tuesday in Pennsylvania studied aircraft construction in Germany, and the wife of another man who allegedly left Germany for Pakistan 9 days before the attacks is being questioned, authorities said. Law enforcement officials in Bochum, an industrial city in northern Germany, have searched an apartment where Ziad Jarrahi, 26, lived. Jarrahi, J-R-R-A-H-I, is one of 19 people the FBI has identified as involved in the attack. They say he belonged to the same militant group as at least two of the men who hijacked commercial airliners that slammed into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon on Tuesday. He came from the village of Al-Marj in Lebanon's eastern Bekaa Valley. Kane, Germany's chief prosecutor, said Saturday that Jarrahi had trained at Florida flight schools in Venice and Miami after leaving Germany in June, and that he once held a pilot's license in Hamburg. In Jarrahi's Bochum apartment, investigators found a suitcase packed with, quote, aircraft-related documents, unquote, Name said. His girlfriend filed a missing persons report with police after the attacks. Skipping down again. In Hamburg, investigators have been searching for the man who signed the lease in 1998 for an apartment that Jarrahi rented. Authorities have detained the wife of Sahid Bahaji for questioning, but they have not identified her. She told them Bahaji left for Pakistan on September 2nd to begin an internship with a company there. On Bahaji's personal webpage, he identified himself as an electrical engineering student at the Hamburg Technical University. I would note that many of the people involved in this not only tracked through Germany in connection with this, but they also tracked through Florida. In fact, interestingly enough, South Florida, stomping ground of, among others, Jeb Bush, Florida, the state in which the 2000 U.S. presidential election was flat-out stolen by the Bush forces. Florida, perhaps not incidentally, is the place where many of the hijackers came from. More about the Florida-slash-German connection to this, the San Jose Mercury News of Thursday, September 13th of the year 2001, had an article by James Risen and David Johnston of the New York Times. This is datelined Washington and headlined, "Hijackers Linked to Bin Laden," subtitled, "U.S. Agents Search for His Associates in Three States." And there's discussion here about Mohammed Atta. And apparently Atta and perhaps others of the suspects in this case trained at the Huffman Aviation School in Venice. This is headed up by a fellow named Rudy Deckers, last name D-E-K-K-E-R-S. It's not mentioned in the passage that I'm about to read to you, but I would note that in numerous television interviews, it was quite apparent that not only Deckers, but also several of the people at the flight school, his in-laws and children, were German. Now, again, this should not be misunderstood as being anti-German for reasons I've hopefully already explained, but rather some of the underground Reich networking, I think, needs to be contemplated in connection with this event. And where we have Middle Eastern terrorist suspects tracking through Germany, then going to Florida and training in a German-run aviation school in Florida, and the Deckers Aviation School is that, the Huffman Aviation, I think that the possibility of BND slash Mueller organization slash underground Reich networking here is a possibility that needs to be very seriously considered. Of the German slash Florida Huffman Aviation, we read, "In Florida, FBI agents early on Wednesday searched Huffman Aviation in Venice, where they suspected two of the hijackers had learned how to fly commuter jets last year. Rudy Deckers, the company's president and owner, said the agents asked him about two former students, Moran Al-Shehi and Mohammed Atta, both of whom are suspected by the authorities to be among the hijackers. Deckers said both men attended his flight school from July until November of 2000 for training on single and multi-engine small jets. Deckers said they completed the course and graduated to larger jet training, but he did not know where they had conducted that training." Again, note that a German-run aviation school in Florida, stomping ground of Jeb Bush, site of the stealing of the 2000 election, that was apparently used to train at least two of the suspects in that case, and note the many evidentiary tributaries tracking from Germany to South Florida, and note again the profound German connections to not only the bombing of Pan Am 103, the investigation into which was attenuated by Robert Mueller, now head of the FBI, but note also that the funding for the World Trade Center bombing in 1993 came from Germany, and as the elements of the Bin Laden network are suspected of complicity in that. I would also note that there are evidentiary tributaries running between the World Trade Center bombing and the Oklahoma City bombing, as we discussed in For the Record program number 92, specifically a Philippine national, Edwin Angeles, claims to have seen the mastermind of the World Trade Center bombing, Ramzi Youssef, with Terry Nichols in the Philippines, whether or not that assessment was accurate. One of the things that is worth noting about the terrorist blitzkrieg of 9/11/2001 is that this particular event is not only deflecting criticism from George Bush, it is completely covering up many, many important aspects of American political reality. In weeks to come, I'm going to be discussing various things, including other subjects beside this particular event. I would note that some elements within the mainstream press have been uncovering some flat-out lying of the most serious nature by the Bush administration, absolute skullduggery with regard to the budget, chicanery of the most heinous sort with regard to Social Security, and also the cover-up of the participation of energy firms in the Dick Cheney Energy Task Force, flat-out lying by the Bush administration in the stem cell research decision, and a number of mainstream commentators have expressed deep outrage at the blatant, bald-faced lying by the Bush administration and George W. Bush, blatant breaking of campaign promises, blatant breaking of blatant cover-ups of these events. However, the political debate for the foreseeable future is going to be dominated by this event. We will not be hearing about Social Security, or about the budget fiasco, or about Bush lying about the stem cells, or about Dick Cheney's skullduggery vis-a-vis the Vice President's Energy Task Force, or anything else. Debate. It is now being said that people have to unite in order to combat this, and this is eliminating a vital debate on a number of key issues. And I would also note that even as Democrats and other elements have been capitulating in the interests of maintaining unity, elements associated with George Bush and, that's George W. Bush, and the political forces that he represents have been utilizing this event in the most partisan of fashions. And among the people utilizing this event in a very partisan fashion, not surprisingly, is the elder George Bush. Noting again his position as the director of the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism, the intergovernmental networks that were created, interagency governmental networks created by that task force, were utilized by George Bush as the vehicle for the realization of the Iraqgate and Iran-Contra machinations, in which the very terrorist states we were told we had to be protected against by these networks were the beneficiaries of these networks. And George Bush was utilizing, among others, Manzar al-Qasar in these networks. George Bush, the elder George Bush, that is now blaming the intelligence failures in the 9/11-2001 attacks on, surprise, surprise, Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton's attempts at limiting the types of personnel utilized by CIA. The scapegoating by the elder George Bush of Bill Clinton for this, and again in the most highly partisan fashion, and in the type of fashion that the Democrats have been avoiding. They say they want to maintain unity, so they're not going to criticize Bush. But the forces grouped around Bush are already utilizing this case in the most partisan fashion. The following was carried in the San Jose Mercury News of September 16th of 2001. That's today. This is a Chicago Tribune article by Michael Killian. Dateline Washington headlined, Clinton-era rule hurt recruitment by CIA, some say. Subtitled, U.S. cannot avoid hiring unsavory operatives, unquote, for fight against terrorism, Senior Bush says. This article reads in part, as the Bush administration gears up to retaliate against those responsible for last week's bombings, charges have surfaced that curbs placed on the CIA during the Clinton administration may have hobbled efforts to prevent terrorist plots. There are calls, especially from Republicans, to, quote, turn loose, unquote, the CIA on this anti-terrorist mission with far fewer restrictions. Speaking to software executives Thursday in Boston, former President George Bush asserted that the CIA's ability to collect on-the-ground intelligence had been crippled by a rule adopted in 1995 that was designed to discourage the recruitment of spies, informants, and other intelligence assets with possible human rights abuses in their backgrounds. Quote, we have to free up the intelligence system from some of its constraints, unquote, said the former president, who served as director of Central Intelligence in the Ford administration, and who, not incidentally, was heavily involved with what turned out to be support activities for the very terrorists that his vice president's task force on combating terrorism was supposed to be opposing, but was in fact benefiting, using other elements perhaps even more heinous, such as Manzar al-Qasar. And I would note that Robert Mueller, the Bush Justice Department prosecutor, who attenuated some of these, or certainly who presided over a less than vigorous investigation, is now head of the FBI and doesn't figure to be any more vigorous in the pursuit of the full scope of truth in this case as well, at least not when it's going to be damaging to Bush. In For the Record Program 325, I noted the title, The Past is Prologue. That also comes from Shakespeare, that from King Lear. And I would note that the current Bush administration has been very active in trying to delay the release of thousands of pages of records from Ronald Reagan's administration, in which the elder George Bush was the vice president in charge with combating terrorism. The San Francisco Chronicle carried the following article from Saturday, September 1st of 2001. This is an AP story by Deb Reichman of the AP. It's Dateline Washington and headlined, Reagan Records Held for Third Time. White House says it needs to review papers and consult ex-presidents. For the third time, the Bush administration has delayed release of 68,000 pages of Ronald Reagan's White House records, including vice presidential papers from President Bush's father. The papers were to have come out on January 12th, 12 years after Reagan left office, as provided under the law. The White House delayed the release to June 21st, then to the last day in August. So apparently, vice presidential papers from President Bush's father are among those papers being deliberately withheld. And again, note the highly partisan behavior of the elder George Bush, blaming this on Bill Clinton. I would also note that perhaps in the ultimate example of folly, there is discussion now. It remains to be seen whether or not this happens, that in order to maintain unity, the Bush plan for a ballistic missile defense is going to face little opposition from the Democrats, again, so that they can maintain unity under the crisis. This is not only an enormous allocation of fiscal resources in this country at the expense of many other interests, both civilian and military, but it is utterly preposterous. This would not have prevented this attack. Beyond that, Project HARP, which I've spoken about in many programs, is in fact a missile defense system, among other things, and it's already online. Uses electromagnetic, basically uses electromagnetic energy to create an electromagnetic field to neutralize incoming missiles, rather than attempting to swat a fleet of mosquitoes with an arsenal of fly swatters. But note again that even as the forces around George Bush are utilizing this case in a very partisan fashion, other elements, the Democrats, are uniting behind George Bush and perhaps pushing us closer to the missile defense system. San Jose Mercury News of Friday, September 14th of 2001, has the following story by Adam Clymer, Dateline of the New York Times, Dateline Washington, headline, Missile Shield Plan May Gain Support. The suicide attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon appear to have strengthened, not weakened, the prospects for congressional support of President Bush's missile defense plan. Even though the attacks showed that the biggest threat to the nation was from terrorism, congressional reluctance to oppose the president at this time seemed likely to overcome opposition to the missile defense plan, said Representative David Obey of Wisconsin, the senior Democrat on the Appropriations Committee. So even while the Democrats are saying we have to unite behind Bush and not behave in a partisan fashion, others associated with Bush are behaving in a partisan fashion. The Chronicle of September 14th of 2001 has the following article by Gustav Niebuhr of the New York Times. Falwell, that's Jerry Falwell, says U.S. has lost God's protection because of spiritual void. And this concerns Jerry Falwell's appearance on Pat Robertson's 700 Club, and both Falwell and Pat Robertson issued concurring statements blaming, and well, I'll just read the initial paragraph. The Reverend Jerry Falwell said yesterday that the American Civil Liberties Union, along with abortion providers, gay rights proponents, and federal courts that had banned school prayer and legalized abortion, had so weakened the United States spiritually that the nation was left exposed to Tuesday's terrorist attacks. In other words, both Robertson and Jerry Falwell, both associated with Bush, are basically striking a tone not unlike the Islamic militants that have been fingered for this attack. They're basically saying America is the great Satan. I would also note that this crisis may very well exacerbate the already shaky world economy. If so, George Bush will not take the heat for his economic policies, and it instead will be blamed on, that's right, the terrorist blitzkrieg. San Jose Mercury of Wednesday, September 12th of 2001 has an article by Chris O'Brien and Michelle Quinn, Fragile U.S. Economy is Now Put at Risk of Recession. It reads in part, the already weakening U.S. economy could be another casualty of terrorism, as economists worried that consumer confidence, the travel industry, and productivity could all suffer in the wake of Tuesday's attacks. Remains to be seen whether that happens, but if so, this will take the heat off of George W. Bush. Other programs that I've alluded to are available from Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. Website, www.spitfirelist.com. For the record, programs are being compiled on real audio by sister station WFMU-FM, the heroic WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. More recent programs are streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery, one word. There is a longer URL with For the Record programs for download only. There are links on both the FMU website and the For the Record section of the Spitfire website to that URL. That concludes Side B of For the Record Program 326, and mothers shall but laugh to see their babes have before their eyes. This is being recorded on September 16th of 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.